Please stand by. We're about to begin. Good day and welcome to the telehealth conference call. Today's call is being recorded. As a reminder, all lines will be open throughout today's call. Please use your mute button when not speaking to help reduce background noise, and please do not place your line on hold as this may feed music into the conference. At this time, I would like to turn the call over to Doreen Bedaw. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Peter, and good morning. Welcome to the third of three conference calls on health information technology focused on facilitating the completion of the readiness assessment for telehealth or telemedicine. We've invited you to this call because your hospital has expressed interest in participating in iPRO's Health Information Technology Initiative. And actually, I think we've received the memorandum of agreement from some of you. Nationally, the medical community is looking at IT solutions to improve patient safety and quality of care, and CMS has placed a high priority on the use of health information technology by funding IT initiatives for the next few years. I just would like to briefly summarize what this initiative is all about, just to place some context here. In brief, there are three areas of technology that we're going to be looking at in this initiative: barcoding, CPOE, and telehealth or telemedicine. CMS's goal, and therefore iPRO's goal, is to assist you over the next couple of years to assess first where you are and then to work with you to develop a strategic plan for the eventual implementation and then to reassess your readiness. We're working on three areas of technology in this initiative, but we're asking that hospitals focus just on one area in this initiative to achieve the best outcome. In order to participate in the IPG, or the Identified Participant Group, we need your CEO to sign and return the Memorandum of Agreement. And I think that the hospitals on the call have already done that, but if not, if you could ensure that in fact is done as soon as possible, we'd appreciate that. To complete the readiness assessment, which we're going to be talking about today, to see where you're currently at now, and then to complete that assessment once again near the completion of the project to see how far you've come. And then also for your team to work with iPRO to develop a strategic plan for implementation. And we have various tools designed to guide you through this process. Since this project is all about planning and good planning leads to success, we believe that the additional time and effort devoted to planning will lead to a successful implementation for your hospital. And our objective for today's call is to review with those interested in telehealth or telemedicine, the various aspects of the assessment tool to facilitate the completion of the tool and answer any questions that you might have. I'm now going to turn the call over to Ms. Marguerite Schaefer, who is our Senior Director of Improvement Strategies and Quality Improvement.
Okay, good morning. I'm glad that you're able to join us. I'm going to move right into the overview of the telemedicine site assessment. You know, when we think about transformational change, certainly one of the biggest components will be the use of information technology as we move forward. And as Doreen mentioned, we've had two previous conference calls covering CPOE and barcoding. And we know that they have the ability to achieve improvement by decreasing reliance on vigilance and human memory and to simplify and standardize work processes. Telemedicine allows real-time consultation with medical specialists to people who live in rural areas. And it allows rural hospitals the ability to also provide continuing education to their medical staff and nursing staff. Certainly, as we all know, to undertake any project, one of the things that you really need to do is take a look at where you are. And in terms of telemedicine, that means that you really do have to assess your facility, the professional staff, the community in which you live, to get enough you know, baseline information to proceed with a project plan that will work for you and hopefully guarantee success. The tool that we're going to go through is designed to actually for both hospitals who have not used telemedicine at all and are starting from scratch, and then there is a large component of this tool that has to be completed by those or it's for those that already have telemedicine in place. Now, I'm going to go through the entire tool, and if you do not have telemedicine in place, I would suggest very strongly that you stay on the line and go through the entire tool for the simple reason that if you don't have telemedicine in place, there are major components that you really do need to think about that are covered in the second half of this tool, and I'll explain that as I move along further. I hope you have the tool in front of you. We can share a copy of the tool with you if you don't after the call. I'm going to go through it rather quickly. Some of the information on the tool is a bit redundant, and I will go through those areas quickly. The first component of the tool asks for information on the particular facility. And to describe the facility in terms of a number of beds, acute care beds, your emergency room capacity, satellite clinics that you might have, and the types of medical staff that you have, the number of physicians, specialists, nurses, etc. And this information will help you, again, in terms of looking at how best to use telemedicine and the types of specialties that you might need. It also asks if you have physicians that are hired by the hospital, and I think there it's very important because it moves on to the next question of if the physicians, if they're not working for the hospital, how far away from the hospital are their offices? What's the estimated time that it takes most of your physicians to get to the hospital if they are needed? So it asks for the percentage of physicians and how far away in terms of miles they are. In terms of insurance statistics, this is also very important information because it does clearly impact on reimbursement for telemedicine, and you do need to think about the majority of patients that you serve, whether it be Medicare, Medicaid, third-party payers, etc. It then asks about administrative culture. Do you have buy-in from the Board of Trustees? Do you have buy-in from the CEO? Are they in support of the implementation of telemedicine? Do they fully understand the impact in terms of a rural setting, how important this can be for providing appropriate care for the patients within your community? In terms of the physician champions, in terms of telemedicine, are they on board with it? How do they view it? Do you think that they would actually use it? You need to explore with the physicians that are on your staff if any of them have actually had any experience with it. And are you currently, it asks about current use of telemedicine that you may have in place and whether or not you've been successful in terms of its use. You also have to look clearly at the community that you serve. A lot of these questions have to do with the size of your community, the square mile, the type of population that you serve, and also if you have access, enough access to primary care. Is it a problem? Is it something that you need to look at in terms of the use of telemedicine? Emergency room care and specialty care. Do you have traveling specialists? How often do they come to your institution? Can they be relied upon to make the visits that they're scheduled to make? All of these things you need to know in terms of establishing what you are going to use telemedicine for within your institution. The next question has a list of all of the different types of services, the medical services, that should be available, and it asks you to prioritize where the shortages are, taking a look at all of these. There is one for emergency and trauma medicine. You might want to break those apart, and there is a whole list from cardiology to neurology, ophthalmology, pain management, etc. and this will help you to determine where your greatest need is. In terms of telemedicine and medical information needs, it asks for you to rate from very to somewhat, not at all, or duplicative, the health services that are available in your community. And again, all of those specialties are listed out for you to determine where your greatest need is.
Okay.
The next question asks, if the telemedicine services were available, would your medical staff be willing to do the following? Would they refer patients? If you set up telemedicine for cardiology, for radiology, would the physicians in your hospital refer their patients? Would they be willing to participate in the consults and be trained in order to carry out these telemedicine consults appropriately? Would you be able to acquire the equipment and also become a provider? So you really do need to poll all of your medical staff very clearly to make sure that if you did put this in place, that they would be willing to use it. The other question asks if anyone, as I mentioned before, on your medical staff has already been involved in any way with telemedicine. I think that they can probably, if so, they could probably give you a great deal of information. And don't forget to ask anybody in terms of radiology, pharmacy, nursing, not just the medical staff. To what extent do you think or perceive the following would be barriers to implementing telemedicine in your community? This is kind of a multidiscipline assessment tool that has to be filled out, because you do have to poll the staff within your hospitals and not just the medical staff again. It's important to get input from a variety of staff in the hospital. But what would be the attitudes of your employees? Would confidentiality be a problem? What about cost, lack of medical staff, technical staff? So these are all the things that you have to, would there be, a commitment to time to carry these assessments out? Would there be people willing to go through training to be able to do this? The ongoing cost for upkeep of all of this technology. So you really do need, again, to think about all these things as you begin to implement. In terms of continuing education, which is a big factor and a use for telemedicine, you need to look at what your medical staff and your nursing staff and others are currently doing in terms of continuing education. Does your medical staff travel for continuing education purposes? Do they have to go into urban areas to be trained? How often do they do that? How many times a year? What cost is involved in terms of educating, continuing education of staff? Are there appropriate and adequate opportunities for them to partake in continuing education courses? Do you currently offer yourself right now continuing education to your staff via video conferencing? And again, because telemedicine, a big use of telemedicine is continuing education, you really need to look at what you're currently doing and how this will help you in terms of continuing education. I'm going to turn the conference over to Suzanne Columbus at this point. She is going to cover some questions on the technical equipment. Suzanne is kind of our IT expert, and she's going to cover some of the internet access and IT information that you need to know in terms of how to get this network up and running.
Thank you, Patty. Okay, what we're going to do is we're just going to go through the questions on page 6, starting with question number, it's not really a question, I guess, but starting with number 7, we're just going to be discussing equipment resources. And the first question that they ask is about internet access. Now, internet access is a key component here for telehealth programs, for really being able to support an infrastructure that's going to be, in a higher technical capability. Now, first of all, the question is, do you have Internet access? You need Internet access. You should have Internet access. But the second question says, if you do have Internet access, is it a central or shared Internet access point? Now, that basically means, what does each computer have a dedicated line? You know, so let's say if you're in your exam room, we could say, is there a dedicated line going to this particular video equipment that's just for the video equipment, or is that line being shared? That's just really what they're kind of looking to find out. Now, in addition to that, does anyone have any questions about what a dedicated line or a shared access point is? Because they are different. Just think in terms of for a shared access point, think in terms of when you're at home and you have either a DSL or a cable modem and it's your home network, and perhaps you have three or four folks trying to, computers linked up, and your three kids are trying to hit the Internet at the same time. That's called a shared Internet access point, just so you know, from, you know, an easy way to think of it. And then it talks about an uplink and downlink rate. Well, that's your upload and download rate. And just to let you know, you should have the same speed. You should think about this. You know, your IT folks should think about this. You need to have the same speed bidirectionally for both uplink and downlink rate in order to, you know, upload and download to the remote server. And that's pretty critical. You know, that makes it more interactive. The next question we have is, do you have a video conferencing bridge? Now, currently, what we term that is a multi-point control unit. That's what a bridge is. And that allows two or more sites to attend the conference. Okay? It's a device, and it enables, you know, participants basically to participate in voice or video call. The next set of questions talks about your particular equipment. So if you have, let's say, I really am not sure what kind of equipment you would actually have, but let's say you would name the make and model of video conferencing unit, let's say, or of your multi-point control unit, okay? Then you would determine what's the capacity of it, what are the baud rates, what's the speed of your system, okay? What's its capacity? Now, just so you know, what H.323 and H.320 are, they're the ITU standard for ISDN conferencing. Okay, and that standard includes your audio, video, data, and control. Now, what is ISDN? Okay, an ISDN line supports the data transmission and the bandwidth, and it actually guarantees your bandwidth once your connection is established. It's like a high-speed telephone line.
Okay.
We wanted to talk about having an IP address. You can either have a static IP or a dynamic IP address. What is an IP address? That's your internet protocol. And that's basically what you're going to be signing on to. That's really what you're going to be using. You need to have a dedicated IP address from a server. That's it, really. If you want me to, I can go into the video conferencing coordinates, but just go through the rest of the questions.
Okay.
Okay. If you have any questions on anything I just discussed, please feel free to stop me now and ask. I know that's a little bit technical, and I'm available if you need to ask any further questions.
Can I ask a question? Do any of the hospitals on the line utilize at this point in time telemedicine for any specialty use? Yes, no?
Maybe teleradiology? Does anybody use teleradiology? The store and forward? Hello?
Yes, Medina Memorial Healthcare System has a PAC system.
Okay. Thank you. And do you utilize it? Fully?
PAC system, yes, we do.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
Next question talks about just asking some questions about your coordinator's name, telephone, email address for your video conferencing. No big deal. Your technical coordinator's name, if you can find out that information. Usually it's your information systems department that you would go to get that type of stuff. Network technical support contact information. This is just so that you can gather up who you're going to need on your team and who you're going to be able to talk to. So your network technical support contact would be also in your IS department. Okay. Thanks, Suzanne.
I'm going to move on to the next component of the survey or the assessment tool, actually. And if you're currently, if you currently have telemedicine program in place, you would be answering all of these questions. I'm going to go through them quickly. If you have any questions on any of them, please stop me. And maybe Medina, since you do have the PAC system in place, if you can add anything in terms of comments when we get to any of these components of this assessment tool, you might want to chime in. The first section covers actually the clinical or the clinic, excuse me, environment. And it looks at the size of the exam room. It looks at patient comfort in terms of temperature control, as well as control of temperature to preserve the equipment. The next component of that is to look at exam dust control again. That's really geared toward the protection, not only, you know, of in terms of keeping the area clean, but also to keep the it dust-free, because it does impact on the equipment overall. It talks about the exam room quality assurance. Now, I'm not exactly sure whether or not or what quality assurance measures are in place for this, but it does talk about cleanliness of the telemedicine examining room meeting quality assurance standards, and it asks what those standards are. It moves on then to talk about inventory of clinical supplies appropriate to the specialties used by the site, and does it contain the necessary supplies in each of the room or in the room. And how often telemedicine peripheral devices such as, you know, stethoscopes and blood pressure machines, et cetera, are cleaned and sanitized. And it asks actually for the specific time, whether it be after each use, daily, weekly, et cetera. So you'd have to think about having either, you know, housekeeping or whoever set up a program to deal with all of these necessities so that you'll meet quality assurance standards in terms of the cleanliness of the room. Then it talks about security and location. Where is the room located? Is it easily accessible for staff? Is it secure? And they do ask very specifically if the equipment is maintained in a locked environment and if all the peripheral equipment is maintained in a locked environment as well. And they ask you to describe the security measures that are currently in place. The next component or the next question deals with access to the telemedicine room. And they want you to check all of the boxes that apply. Who in your institution has access to the telemedicine room? Is it everybody? And they actually go through physicians, of course, physicians only, nursing and physician staff, PAs, administrative personnel. So they're looking for you to really think very clearly about who has access and you know, when that access takes place. And they wanted to know also if you have a convenient location for utilization by healthcare professionals. If the room is located in a convenient place so that it's easily accessible to those that have to use it. The next component or question is looking at provider utilization, equipment utilization, and inventory. They want you to check all the boxes that apply. And they're asking the number of physicians who have presented a real-time telemedicine case. They're actually looking at utilization of telemedicine within your institution if it is in place. Have they received formal training on case protocols? The number of physicians requesting additional case presentation training, the same for nurses and PAs as well. So they're looking for you to think about how telemedicine in your institution is being utilized if, in fact, it is in place. Steps taken within the facility to encourage providers to use it. I think one of the things that we have heard is that in many instances, telemedicine has been put in place for, you know, radiology. For the most part, it's been used for teleradiology, and it's not being really used to its full capacity because there are so many other uses for it. But you do need the physicians and the nurses, you need the staff to utilize this IT, you know, to its fullest capacity. So they are asking you to think about how you can market it almost to the staff within your institution so that it will be used. Do they know it's there? Is it on the agenda items of staff meetings? In other words, is it played up? Do you talk about it at medical staff meetings, at nursing meetings, et cetera? The next component of the tool looks at equipment utilization and inventory, and they ask you to take a look at the types of equipment that you have and peripheral devices that are available in your institution and how often they are used. In terms of things like an otoscope, you know, stethoscopes and digital cameras, etc. The equipment and software locator information is all of your telemedicine equipment and software located in a single location. Is it in a single room, a couple of rooms? Does it include a patient exam room? And who is the person responsible for taking care of that equipment, where it's stored, et cetera? Administration issues. Does your facility's administrative staff support telemedicine patient care? Is it something that administration is behind and used in your facility? And would you like to see them enhance the capacity for you to use telemedicine within your institution? Has your administrative staff initiated a business plan which allows you to sustain the program? Is there money being allocated for you to utilize the program and expand its use where necessary? Or has it been put in place for radiology and then just kind of, you know, dropped? In terms of your location, your physical location, are you near a state border? And the reason that they ask you to think about this in terms of location is insurance differences from one state to another. Does your facility have liability coverage for telemedicine services? This may be an issue, and your legal department may want to take a look at this in terms of, again, you know, things happening, errors or whatever. Does your facility administration contribute to financially, again, this is a bit redundant, to the telemedicine program, and how much do they set aside for its use? In terms of community relations, does your facility currently reach out to the community to promote the use of telemedicine? Do the people in your community know that it's available, know the uses of it, how it's used,
Do you periodically put information out in newsletters or the newspapers within your community to let people know that it is an available resource? Would training of facility personnel in how to market the program in the community, do you think that would be worthwhile in terms of talking about it and letting people know it's available? The nurses and physicians and others who work in the hospital are out in the community. They probably live in the community, and they certainly would be able to market the use of telemedicine. In terms of clinical aspects, are there plans for expanding the telemedicine program within your community? If you started out using it for radiology, are there other specialties such as dermatology or psychiatry that it could be used for? I know in rural settings, you know, it is difficult to get a lot of specialists within the area, and it's time-consuming for people to travel. And if it could be used for these purposes, it would be, I think, very beneficial to the hospital in terms of, you know, marketing what they can offer people within their community. Has the telemedicine program enabled you to collaborate with other telemedicine sites? So again, this is all looking at expansion of using a system that you already have that has a lot of implications. And then there are billing issues that have to be considered. Do you need prior approval? Do all insurance companies cover telemedicine, et cetera? Follow-up visits. Are procedures being followed? And this moves into we're moving into an area now that covers follow-up visits, documentation, the types of forms that you have in place that collect information. Does that information go into the patient's medical records so that if they should come back into the hospital, that information can be found in their medical record? Do you look at patient satisfaction surveys in terms of telemedicine? And, you know, if no, you know, why not? And also looking at the satisfaction of the physicians and the nurses that are using telemedicine within your institution, because I'm sure that, like with anything else, there are ways to improve the practice, further education, whatever. So you really do need to ask the patients and the physicians and the nurses that are involved in the use of the telemedicine what their feedback is, and look at that feedback in order to make improvements over time. Do you have, and they ask if you have, what forms you have being completed in terms of the telemedicine encounters? And are there protocols in place for reviewing and updating information on follow-up or for follow-up visits? And does that information find its way into the medical record? In terms of the records specifically related to telemedicine, they're looking for progress notes, consult forms being integrated into the patient's medical records. This should be done, and they're asking for explanations, again, if you're already using telemedicine, if this is not being done, why it's not being done. Are the patient's telemedicine medical records being integrated into the records located at the facility and available for non-telemedicine encounters or admissions? So all of this information in terms of the telemedicine use visits should be incorporated into the patient's ongoing medical record. Steps have to be taken to ensure patients' privacy and the confidentiality. So that's another major component that you have to think about. They're looking for specific forms to be utilized and implemented for telemedicine, such as patient consent forms, demographic forms, and referral forms, making sure that you have a patient history in terms of internal medicine cases or non-internal medicine cases as well, patient history form for echocardiology cases, etc. We're on page 16 for those that may be following along on the form. I may be moving a little quickly, so if you have any comments or questions, please feel free to interrupt me. And as a matter of fact, I'll stop now. Does anybody have any questions? So folks from Medina, can I pick your brain for a moment? Does a lot of this information sound familiar, and are you doing a lot of this in terms of your use?
We are doing some of those, but it does concern me because we really don't have a consent form, I believe. But it's certainly, from a patient satisfaction point of view, we've heard from them because when we have to send the patients to a tertiary center for referral, they are much happier getting the CDs to take them than the big envelope of, you know, x-rays that they used to take.
Right.
We've had some challenges on the physician satisfaction portion. It's more mainly because of the internet system as well, getting the images to... We have images going to Australia. We have images going to Texas, you know, for reading as well on the off shift.
Right.
At night. And sometimes that causes problems on the internet, but we're working on it.
Right. In other words, in terms of clarity?
Right.
Okay. And my other question to you, when you do something like that, what's the return time frame in terms of diagnosis or feedback from the site that you're sending these records to?
15 minutes or 20 minutes.
Oh, that's great. Okay. Are there any other, do you have most of the physicians on board with it? I mean, do most of the physicians in your hospital, are they willing to utilize it?
We have, I would probably say out of 35 physicians, we hear more from about a handful of them, maybe eight that I hear from on a regular basis. But we have the, we have two groups of physicians, the older physicians that don't really want to use them, the younger people coming aboard really want to use it.
Right.
Right.
And have you're thinking about expanding this into other specialty areas, I'm assuming?
Yes, as we get more money.
I know. That's the issue with everybody. Okay, well, I thank you very much. And in terms of the radiologists, they're comfortable with... The results so far?
Very, very comfortable. Very. We're looking at expanding. We were just looking at the system last week. It has capability for the physicians to get the reports, not just the images, but the reports and the electronic signatures. It gives you a lot.
Right.
Yeah, so we're looking at expanding it if possible.
And how do you find getting that information into the patient's medical record?
Well, some of the other, we have another physician who is very electronically inclined, and we just transferred to their medical record. Within the system, because we're not electronic, we have to pull it out and put it in the medical record.
Right, right.
Right. But with one office in the area, he is completely, I think, mostly electronic, right, I would say. We just automatically transfer to that office.
Okay.
Yeah. It works very well.
Great. Okay, so you may want to think about, you know, informed consents,
right.
You know, on each patient encounter, so that's good. And again, the final reports are reviewed, you know, the reports are received by the referring provider and facility in a timely manner, and I would say, you know, 15 to 20 minutes is pretty good.
Right. Okay.
Okay. And then the final reports are communicated to the healthcare professional.
Right.
Okay. And then they're placed in the patient's chart, which is great. In terms of continuing medical education, have you used, I guess you haven't used it at all for that purpose?
No, we have not used that system for that at all.
Okay. Okay. So the next block of questions, we're starting on page 17, has to do with the capability of continuing medical education and, you know, the use of telehealth for that purpose. And they ask again if you have a continuing medical education coordinator and what the title of the person is, et cetera, and if you have a calendar of educational events being offered at the facility? And do are people aware of what they are? Again, if you're using it for this purpose. They're asking about CME events being promoted on a regular basis to the staff. And is the telemedicine room unlocked for scheduled events? And then you also, again, have to think about who unlocks that telemedicine room and the setup of the equipment. And is there a designated individual that takes responsibility for that? And if the staff, if that particular individual is not available, is there someone else assigned as a backup for the telemedicine room for various programs? And if that person is also educated on the appropriate use of the equipment, and if they're there ahead of time to set things up and make sure that the event goes off well. Does the CME portion of the telemedicine program contribute to the financial stability of the facility and or healthcare professional? That's something that is a very interesting question, and certainly it probably the answer to that would probably be yes. And are there plans, again, for expanding the educational aspects of telemedicine program within the facility? Prior to the conference call, we were just talking about the possibility of using telemedicine for educating the patient population in a hospital where there are no, where there is little money for various programs in terms of teaching, you know, maybe diabetics or smoking cessation programs or hypertensive classes, et cetera. And then they ask about the evaluation forms in terms of the CME programs that you might be offering at your hospital. The next component looks at the personnel and has there been sufficient education of the personnel in your hospital and the healthcare professionals to utilize the equipment? And if so, to talk about and describe how that education occurs, how many hours, if that's, you know, coordinated, if there is a site coordinator, who takes responsibility for that, the number of hours that they are trained, how many hours per week this individual is involved in telemedicine activities, because you really do have to look at the types of people that you need to run this program and to take responsibility for it. Is there backup coverage available for the site coordinator and the telemedicine director if, in fact, that is two different people, and the accountability? In terms of hub site communication, is there sufficient communication between your hub site and the site coordinator?
Let me actually clarify that question a little bit. The hub site, I'm quite sure, is the site that that you are going to, if you're using telemedicine and you are the remote site, okay, that means that you are the site that is sort of the one that is relying, leaning on an expert who's at a hub site. Okay, so the hub site is the one that's providing the expert, and here you'd be the site coordinator. So clearly, since whenever there's a you know, telemedicine going on, there's got to be obviously two sites involved. This is really just asking, does your site, how is the quality of communication between your hospital, if you happen to be the remote hospital, and the hub site, which is the location of the consultant? Both really ask the same question. The next question, 5.15.2, focuses more on the medical director communication. Is there sufficient communication between your site and telemedicine vendors? And how in specific are network or equipment problems, if they occur and when they occur, communicated to the telemedicine program staff? I think we'd just like to have a little description of that. To see that, you know, there's a process in place by which such problems can be resolved, identified, and resolved quickly. How is personnel turnover in your program? I would imagine, I would think that for most of you there isn't much turnover at all, because it sounds to me, I don't know how many dedicated people you actually have for telemedicine. You're probably sharing staff from other departments. Network environment. Is the network equipment listed below in a secure location and protected from unauthorized physical access? And, of course, it's very important. It needs to be in a locked unit because clearly for security reasons as well as for confidentiality reasons, especially if there are any recordings or tapes available. They've listed a number of different types of locations, a wide area network. Ethernet hub. Ethernet, as you know, is a common networking protocol. Router, if you have a router. I can describe at least what my experience with routers are is that I have one at my home. It's a wireless router. It's set up so that multiple computers have wireless access. So generally what a router is it's a device that manages multiple IP network accessing at the same time. So it sort of distributes input and output. T1 line extender has to do with the ability to accelerate the upload and download. T1 lines are very fast lines. Which position titles have access to the above equipment? Again, the same questions about the environment, whether in terms of temperature and dust there are controls. Is there a management access policy or emergency access in the case of failure of the network? Is there a universal power supply? Now on page 21, question 16.5. It's extremely important, by the way, this is true also for your home computer as well, it's important for anybody who has a computer to have a power supply backup for all of these expensive equipment, mainly because you've all heard of surge protectors, which basically protect you against rapid increases in surge, but what if there's a brownout or there's a drop in voltage? Those can be just as destructive as overloads or power surges. So you need to have a universal power supply to protect delicate equipment from either oversurges or under, periodic drops in voltage, which also can mess things up. Telemedicine, technology, resources. Do you have the following capabilities? And I think you're going to need to probably check with your tech people to see whether you have video over IP, a video data rate via a WAN connection, wide area network. Do you have an ISDN line? And what is your data rate? And please here also list your video conferencing system make and model. And also, if you have a store and forward software platform, what is the name of the store and forward platform? Okay, so PAX would be the answer then for Medina. Just list any other modalities, any other specialized systems, provide the network and program, name, address, telephone number for each location, telemedicine coordinator name, telephone and email address.
That's it.
And that completes the tool.
I know that, you might have found that a little monotonous going all through those questions, but the purpose really of the call today, as with the other two previous calls, was to just walk through the tool with you quickly, again, giving you hopefully the just sort of an overview and to get you started in terms of completion of the tool if you're thinking about focusing on telemedicine. Again, I just do want to mention that we do need the completed tools done and returned to us by the mid-January. So, if you have any questions or you'd like to go over any of this on an individual basis, we'd be happy to do that with you. But we did want to just kind of get things jump-started because we know it's sort of a lengthy tool, but I think a very good one, and I think if you take the time to fill it out, it'll be very helpful to you in planning if you don't have a telemedicine system in place. And for those that do and want to expand, I think this information is very useful. Does anyone have any questions about the tool? Okay. Well, I want to thank you. And again, if you do have any questions, feel free to give us a call at any time. And we'll be following up with you probably within a week or two to see, we'll call you to see if you have any other, you know, questions or concerns in terms of completing the form. Thanks a lot.
This is Doreen. I'd like to thank Marguerite Schaefer, Suzanne Columbus, and Dr. Charles Stimler for their excellent review of the telehealth telemedicine assessment tool today, and for their comments, and also Medina Hospital for their comments and input on their experience and on the assessment. Thanks again to everyone for their participation, and also like to remind everyone that there's an evaluation form available on our Jenny website, which can be accessed at jenny.ipro.org. It's not necessary to use the www before that. And it can be found on under the Health Information Technology section in the area for today's conference calls. So please fill out the evaluation form, as it helps us to continue to bring value to you for these types of programs in the future. Thanks again for your participation today.